everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Captain Brent Allen. This is Dots on a Map, Episode 4. Today we're going to be talking about the regional jet scope section of our contract. But first, let's recap what we looked at in Episodes 1 through 3. We first talked about just what is a JV and code shares, and what are the differences, and what does equity stakes do. Nothing's really changed with that stuff. It still applies because nothing's changed in our contract so far. In Episode 2, we talked about the Aeromexico JV and the implications of the ongoing negotiations with Delta. So we do have some updates on Aeromexico. Since the podcast was published, our Aeromexico JV has turned one. Some of you may have seen the comm that we put out. Feliz aniversario, I think is how you say it. Happy anniversary. So what's it looked like over the last year? We had our national EF&A folks, the accountants that work for Alpha National, go in and break down the flying and the growth of transborder flying between us and Aeromexico. About every standard we look at, Delta Metal has grown on at least 50% of all of those routes. That's really what we're looking for. We're looking for an equitable share of the growth. It's good to see at the one-year anniversary point, we have gained on Delta Metal at least 50% of the ASM's block hours and seat departures. So that's great. So we should have an agreement, right? Well, not so fast. We don't have an agreement yet. And if you go back and listen to the podcast, one of the things that we talked about as a concern for the Delta pilots is what that 49% equity stake, what it means as far as the future for Delta pilots. The 49% equity stake on a carrier that advertises a 30% less cost to operate than Delta Airlines, it could incentivize disproportionate future flying on that partner carrier, kind of an alter ego concern. So to this point, management is really just unwilling to address our concerns with the equity stake. We're hopeful, however, that ongoing negotiations will yield an equitable agreement for the Delta pilots that will give Delta the flexibility to place their metal where they need to seek the greatest yield. We have seen some movement over the company as far as rhetoric goes. They've launched a microsite, Delta's Futures Global, and we've seen key members of management start using the phrase equitable growth. That makes us happy. We just need to put it in writing. So that's the update for Aeromexico. The latest episode was Blue Skies, and that's what some folks are calling the new transatlantic joint venture. It's kind of back to the future, so it's really the amalgam of three carriers that we already have joint ventures with, and they're just kind of mashing them up into one, and they've applied for a new antitrust immunity that will combine the KLM, Air France, and Virgin Atlantic into one new joint venture. They're expecting government approval sometime by the summer of next year. Let's talk about RJs. I am admittedly a novice when it comes to my understanding of the regional jet fleet and the way those airlines operate on behalf of Delta. So I have asked Evan Bach to come in and lend his expertise, and we'll ping-pong our discussion about RJs back and forth. Evan's a captain on the 717 in New York, and Evan, you were at SkyWest, right?
I was for 8 years.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the podcast, Evan. Let's jump into what the pilot working agreement currently allows as far as bottom-end scope, I like to call it, the small jets that operate on behalf of Delta as feeder. If you would like to take a look at this, the stuff we're going to be talking about in a bulletized notepad type format, take a look at dowscope.org and you can download it from there. Take notes on it, write your questions down, and then you can email any of those questions to us at dalscope@alpha.org. And we'll make sure we get those back to you. You can also post your questions on the Ask the Expert portion of the MEC Facebook page. And we've got a crack communications team that will be pinging all of our subject matter experts to get you answers in a timely fashion. And right now, our Section 1 allows Delta to currently operate 459 RJs flown by various DCI carriers. That includes about 135 50-seat CRJs, 102 70-seat regional jets, and then 223 76-seat RJs with an asterisk next to that 223. Right now, we currently have 222 on the books. because the moment they trip to that last 76-seat large RJ, the number of allowed 50-seaters jumps down to 125. That is measured on the 1st of January yearly for compliance, and we were within compliance this past year. I know that when we were talking about this podcast, Evan, I asked you to go back and look at kind of some of the history behind the regional jet explosion that occurred back in the early 90s. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I did a little research into the history of regional jets. And looking back, the 50-seat regional jet was really kind of the spark, I think, that set off a lot of this growth of RJs. And the first regional jet that was on Delta property was operated by Comair, which Delta ended up acquiring a good portion of and owning at some point. The first RJ on Delta property was in 1994 through Comair, and Comair actually ended up owning the or operating the largest fleet of CRJ aircraft for a long time. And the growth of regional jets really expanded through the late 90s into the early 2000s.
As we look at it through the, you know, the clarity of historical lens, it seemed like that 50-seat RJ came out and it redefined feeder flying and the markets they could reach and the speed that they could fly. And that was really the shiny new toy that airline managements around the nation and around the world were very enamored with. You can now jump on a small jet and fly quickly for a small to medium stage length, and they could allow them to revisit frequency. They could just blast these small RJs in to saturate markets over and over again, and that was really what sparked the explosion in aircraft orders. I think in 2000, Delta made the largest single aircraft order in history, right? It was like 500, right? That was right around contract 2000 for us, which then allowed 76-seat aircraft on property as Bombardier expanded their product and started to stretch it out and offer a two-class product. And we see a history of United, Delta, Northwest, all buying feeder carriers, either partially or wholly. You mentioned Comair. I think Delta entered the Comair game with about 20% stake, and then they ended up spending like $2 billion to buy Comair as a wholly owned subsidiary. And Delta's also owned ASA and now currently owns Endeavor. And in Northwest,
Compass later on in the game, but there was Northwest Airlink, which was made up of a portion of multiple regional airlines, including Mesaba, for example, up in Minneapolis and Detroit. So looks like Northwest and Delta used multiple regional airlines for a long time. And I've heard a lot of talk of whipsaw and so forth. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Right. So pilots now may not, especially pilots who have been on property for, you know, 10 years or less, may not be completely familiar with what a whipsaw is, unless they came from the regional airline. So April 2000, Delta orders 500 RJs. It's still the largest single standing order of aircraft in history. And then, boom, obviously 9/11, the very business model and our likelihood and our livelihoods are threatened. What that allowed is essentially through LOA 51, trying to avoid or going into bankruptcy. Now, pilots are negotiating with a little bit of a gun to their head, and it allows management to expand greatly the amount of large RJ flying. Now what we've got is pilots on the street between Northwest and Delta. I think we had around 2,000 furloughed pilots who were simultaneously looking at airplanes that had Delta painted on the side, flying in droves while regional airlines were hiring like crazy. So we can understand where that angst was deep-seated. There's nothing more frustrating for pilots than being out of work and seeing somebody else take over that flying. All right, so that's where we were in the past. So, how about now, Evan? Where are we now? What happened to all those shiny 50-seaters?
Well, fortunately for those of us that have spent a lot of time in CRJ 200s, for example, like myself, 50-seat regional jets are actually no longer being produced. Most major airlines, including Delta, tends to shy away now from the 50-seat product. Passengers don't like it. But really, they're moving toward a mainline style regional jet, which is 70 or 76 seaters, including the CRJ 900s and the E175s. And do we have any kind of restrictions, Brent, on the number of those larger mainline style jets?
Yeah, we absolutely do. The number of 76 seat RJs allowed in the contract was expanded with contract 2012, and that is a maximum of 223 76 seat RJs. And the number of 70-seat RJs, we say 70-seat, but it's 51 to 70-seat, is capped at 102 aircraft. And it's interesting that now we're seeing company acquisition plans impacted by our PWA. So Delta on June 20th, you may have read the article on DeltaNet about the 20 new CRJ-900s unveiling the atmosphere cabin. If you look at that cabin, man, it really looks like it could be the cabin, the product on it looks like it could be on an Airbus. It could be certainly 717. It could be any of our mainline aircraft would carry a product like that. So when I say mainline product, I'm thinking multi-branded fares. You got three class, economy comfort. You've got video on demand or Wi-Fi. That's the kind of thing that screams Delta mainline to me. But now we're seeing that product is offered on all those large RJs.
Sure. A lot of these RJs, they can fly pretty long distances, I would imagine now, right? I know I had a little time in the CRJ-900, and we were flying some pretty long stage lengths on that aircraft. So is there any kind of limitation as to what stage lengths or flights that these RJs can fly?
Yep. Basically, as that technology for that size airplane gets better and better and they become more efficient, they start to run into efficiency limitations via the constraints of the pilot working agreement. So some other limits that we check on the compliance aspect of scope and compliance are some stage length, hub-to-hub, and a block hour ratio between DCI carriers and mainline. So as an example, 85% of all of the RJ flying has to average a stage length of less than 900 statute miles. So you see where, especially like with a 175 or E175SC product that can really get up high and sip gas, that's the kind of long, thin route that we see Delta exploiting with C-Series coming up. And they could potentially do that with a 175 if it were a mainline, but because it's DCI, that is it's affected by that less than 900 statute miles limitation for 85% of the total flights. Additionally, 90% of the flying's got to be between hubs and large city to feeder locations. And finally, RJs have to act like RJs, so only 6% of them or less can be utilized for hub-to-hub flying. So those are the restrictions that are placed in Section 1 that really kind of place some handcuffs on how the company is allowed to use that fleet of almost 450 airplanes, which incidentally, 450 airplanes, I mean, that's over a third of the total airplanes with Delta painted on the side of them flying around today. Additionally, Delta announced those 20 new CRJs that are going to be flown by Endeavor, and 1 week later, there was an article on Motley Fool, and it's titled, "Can Delta Airlines and its Pilots Achieve a Win-Win?" The investor's notion of the win-win in this case is for the pilots to just relax their scope clause enough to allow Delta to put six more seats on those new jets. And so instead of adding 76-seat jets, which they could be doing, they're replacing older 70-seat jets with these airplanes in their configuration. So it's interesting that Delta announces, hey, we've got these 20 great new RJs with an awesome cabin product. And then the Motley Fool writer Adam Levine Weinberg says, wow, if the pilots would just give up on some of those pesky scope clause restrictions, they could really create a win-win for both them and the company. So it's not hard to see where this is going as we approach Section 6. It's happened in every Section 6 in the last 20 years. A company ask is always to allow more of the lower end scope relief. So that's definitely something we need to keep our eye on the prize there.
Sure. Sounds like a lot of jobs, a lot of the large RJ flying. Do you know roughly how many jobs at mainline that might represent?
Well, let's say that the business case made sense, which is obviously something that is not an assumption now. But if we had those 102 70-seat RJs, if we had those 102 70-seat CRJs and the 223 76-seat CRJs at Delta, it would really add up, assuming 7 crews-ish per airplane, you're looking at like 2,300 pilot jobs. So that's 2,300 jobs that are flying the mainline product. I think if it's a mainline product, it ought to be a mainline pilot. So there's a significant amount of outsourcing on the bottom end that I think that we don't always pay attention to because we're paying attention to wide body stuff that we've talked about in JVs before. So we could have 2,300 more pilots right now on the Delta seniority list if we just flew those 70 and 76-seat RJs right here at mainline.
Right. Do you think the business case of flying large RJs at mainline needs to be looked at again?
Absolutely, especially as we approach Section 6 and the company looks to expand any holes we've got in within Section 1. We need to look at this periodically. And now that regional jet salaries have increased, the expense of the products increase, it definitely begs the case of, hey, what is the business case for having this flying at mainline? And could we close the bottom end hole in our scope once and for all and prevent any future whipsaw on the bottom end if there's an economic downturn? I think that would be a touchdown if we can do that.
Yeah, that would be good for all pilots. Absolutely. So as a line pilot, what can I do to help with this process?
Well, first and foremost, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're looking at our bullet points, you're way ahead of the ball game. So stay informed. Go to an LEC or an MEC meeting. Let your reps know that outsourcing more Delta flying is just not okay with you. Make your voice heard. Write your reps. Call your reps. Stay informed. So on the next Dots on a Map episode, we'll talk about how the history of outsourcing on RJs can be used as a cautionary tale as we move forward with our JV negotiations. We've got some updates on the Korean Air joint venture negotiations, so we hope everybody stays tuned and looks for future episodes of Dots on a Map. Evan, thanks for coming in and lending your expertise to the pod. Hope to have you back on future episodes.
Great. Thanks for having me, Brent.